This is the Down East Journal on Public Radio East. I'm Jared Brumbaugh. This Tuesday was the 11th anniversary of September 11th. 9/11 ceremonies were held across eastern North Carolina to remember the thousands that were lost in terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. On Tuesday, at Lejeune Memorial Gardens in Jacksonville, a couple hundred people turned out for the Patriot Day observance.
God of love, we place in your loving arms the thousands of innocent lives that were lost on that unforgettable morning of September 11th, 2001. We also remember the courage.
The crowd sat in silence as stories of people who were aboard the planes hijacked on September 11th were read. There were also stories of first responders and people who worked in the Pentagon and World Trade Center that were killed on September 11th.
On their second wedding anniversary, Jermaine told Helen that the World Trade Center had brought them together. When the plane hit the World Trade Center, Helen tried to call Jermaine unsuccessfully. Instead, she reached her brother, crying. By telephone, he did his best to hold her hand.
At 8:46, the ceremony paused to observe a national moment of silence.
At this moment, on September 11th, 2001, the first hijacked plane crashed into the North Tower of the World Trade Center.
Sirens broke the silence, symbolic of the law enforcement, fire, and emergency responders who died that tragic day. The ceremony also focused on remembering those who paid the ultimate price defending our country in the war on terror.
And at this very moment, brave members of our military are risking their lives for our freedom. To all of these brave men and women, as well as to their families, we say thank you and God bless you.
11 years later, we are still fighting the war. However, U.S. troops withdrew from Iraq in December 2011, and combat operations in Afghanistan are expected to come to an end by the middle of next year. With more military service members returning home, there has been an alarming increase in service member suicides. According to the United States Marine and Family Program's Suicide Prevention Program, there have been 32 suicides in the first 7 months of 2012. At the current rate, 2012 could be the highest in the past decade. In July, 8 Marines took their lives, making it the highest monthly total this year. The U.S. Army reported 26 active duty soldiers committed suicide in July. August figures have not been released. Whether it's relationship problems, financial struggles, combat-related post-traumatic stress, or repeated deployments, there are many things to consider when trying to identify what would cause someone to take their life. Board-certified psychiatrist in the mental health department at Naval Hospital Camp Lejeune, Dr. Victor Barnes, says the symptoms of post-traumatic stress are debilitating if left untreated.
They continue to affect your life. You start to avoid certain places or sounds or things or events in order to try to decrease the amount of symptoms, and they become all-involving, and then somebody becomes basically isolated, and they're not able to do and perform their duties because they're dealing with a severe level of anxiety.
Camp Lejeune's Naval Hospital serves Marines and sailors and active-duty family members and retirees. Mental health services provided include care for post-traumatic stress, behavioral health, and traumatic brain injury, among others. About 50% of the patients that receive treatment at the mental health clinic have post-traumatic stress. Dr. Barnes says combat-related PTS isn't the main cause of suicides, but says it's just one more variable to consider.
When you look at combat versus non-combat statistics, it seems that about 50%, it falls out about 50 to 50% that combat to non-combat suicide attempters and completers, it's about 50-50. So it's not one or the other, or increasing some post-traumatic stress due to combat doesn't necessarily mean it will increase your risk of attempting suicide.
In an effort to prevent post-combat related suicides, Director of Mental Health at Camp Lejeune's Naval Hospital, Dr. Sasan Gurani, says early detection of post-traumatic stress symptoms is key.
When they first come back from deployment, they go through the post-deployment testing, and if they're picked up with PTSD or PTS symptoms, they're further referred to our services, either to the mental health and or to substance abuse. So we really try to capture all of them. However, those tests are, we can only rely on what the patient reports.
Since symptoms of post-traumatic stress can take time to develop, Dr. Guarani says a companion program is in place for providers to reach out to Marines and sailors 1 to 2 months after returning from deployment.
They mingle with the Marines to see if anyone has any specific questions or concerns. And generally, you know, people feel more comfortable being able to come up and talk to them. And that way they can we can try to capture some of the people who are having problems and just, you know, don't want to step forward and come get help.
Camp Lejeune's Naval Hospital also uses the buddy system called ACT to monitor a person's attitude, behavior, and levels of stress. ACT stands for Ask, Care, Treat.
You know, ask point blank. It's important to ask them, are you thinking about hurting yourself? Are you thinking about suicide? Over the years, you know, people have had concerns that if you bring up the topic of suicide, it'll increase their risk of attempting. However, that is found to be completely false. You can ask and then care for them, watch over them until you can get them to care. And then, of course, the treatment, you know, get them to treatment.
The Naval Hospital at Camp Lejeune also provides walk-in service where patients can receive one-on-one treatment. There's also acupuncture and art therapy, as well as group therapies. September is Suicide Prevention Month, and providers in the mental health department recently went through suicide training. As healthcare providers seek to put an end to the rising suicide rates among the military, there are some groundbreaking developments on the science front. There is research currently underway at Indiana University to show how a nasal spray could be used to prevent suicides among the military and civilians. Indiana University of Medicine professor and researcher Dr. Michael Kubek.
When this TRH, or thyrotropin-releasing hormone, which is a neuropeptide, is given to patients either intravenously or in the cerebral spinal fluid, it had a profound effect on their behavioral response in major depressive disorder and in patients with suicide ideation.
The problem is getting TRH to cross the blood-brain barrier, which prevents substances in blood from injuring the brain. The United States Army awarded Dr. Kubek a 3-year grant to study how to get TRH safely into the brain. He hopes a nasal spray will become available in 3 years. There are more immediate things you can do if you or someone you know is suffering from post-traumatic stress. The Department of Veterans Affairs has a hotline you can call. The number is 1-800-273-8255. You can also make an appointment at the Naval Hospital at Camp Lejeune. Jared Brumbaugh, Public Radio East. This is the Down East Journal. On August 17th, Governor Beverly Perdue signed Executive Order 124 to promote stronger communication between state agencies, community leaders, and military officials. Even though increased awareness of military activity is vital to North Carolina's economy, the state has had a long history of communication with its military installations. Stephen O'Connell has more.
Effective immediately, Executive Order 124 mandates that all cabinet agencies in North Carolina appoint a military liaison officer. The officer will maintain a strong awareness of military issues and opportunities in the state. Due to the state's use of the military as a major component of our economic engine and future Department of Defense budget cuts, the order will make clear the state's need to comply with military needs. North Carolina's military is the second largest source of revenue for North Carolina, worth $23 billion and employing directly or indirectly 416,000 people. Military Affairs Advisor to the Governor, Colonel John Nicholson, says the order is a reinforcement of responsibilities that already exist.
It's an additional duty that they just have greater situational awareness of what's going on within the military community to help their respective departments and to give me a call and give me a heads up when somebody in their department or somebody that's interested in doing business in North Carolina needs an answer on something related to the military.
There are state agencies that already work with the military, as well as many local leaders that keep in contact with base officials in their community. Regional East Director of Government and External Relations for Marine Corps Installations East, Paul Friday, says one of the initiatives helping to produce the guidelines for the executive order grew from the communication between the military and leaders on the state and local level.
I believe there's a group called the North Carolina Working Lands Group that will have the charge of implementing the Executive Order 124.
The executive order states that all cabinet agencies must become familiar with the function of the North Carolina Working Lands Group. The group was established in 2009 and keeps intact lands that are known to have natural resources and which can be beneficial to private landowners and for military training purposes. Director of Military Affairs and Strategic Planning at the North Carolina Department of Environment and Natural Resources, Chris Russo, helped establish the Working Lands Group.
The focus on that is, again, restricting or at least not restricting, but trying to slow the amount of land loss related to natural resources in the state of North Carolina. And most importantly, to try to maintain lands that are compatible with the military's operational mission, especially down east.
Although the bill's focus is the preservation of land compatible to military activity and training, the bill designates that all cabinet agencies communicate with the Advisory Commission on Military Affairs, the Commander's Council, and other state military partnerships. The Advisory Commission on Military Affairs was created in 2001 at the General Assembly and is made up of local and state agency representatives, base officials, and appointed local leaders. The commission meets quarterly to help the military strengthen its place in the state's economy. Colonel Nicholson is the chief administrator of the Advisory Commission and says that their last meeting was largely a discussion of the state school system.
So we brought in and invited the school commissioners from the various military communities to come tell us what their issues were and was there anything that we could do to take up to try and help them out in the future.
The Department of Public Instruction's program coordinator of North Carolina Troops to Teachers, John Taggart, works with the military base's school liaison officers. Taggart helps recruit and train people who are leaving military duty make the transition into teaching. Although Taggart deals directly with military personnel, he doesn't have much contact with military leaders.
There's a Fort Bragg educators meeting that they have, was every 6 months, but they've changed it to an annual meeting now, too. And in that regard, I've actually, in a room with superintendents from the local school system that surrounded Fort Bragg, and they have the garrison commander there that basically, they talk about the education-related issues that are affecting their community there.
If Taggart is appointed as military liaison, the executive order will give him an opportunity to contribute more time to his capacity as military advisor. Taggart also sits on the Military Interstate Compact Council, which implements the Interstate Compact on Education for Military Children. The compact eases the transition military children encounter when parents are deployed or transferred from state to state. Regional East Director of Government and External Relations for Marine Corps Installations East, Paul Friday, says the success of initiatives such as the Interstate Compact is reliant on the cooperation and knowledge of all parts of the government.
The dialogue and the partnership that goes on really takes place everywhere from federal, multi-state, state, regions within a state, and then down to the county, local level. And that's a mouthful, but you really have to be engaged at all levels because depending on the issue or the opportunity, you need to work at sometimes at all of those levels.
The Working Lands Group also functions on multiple levels of government. In May of 2012, the group was charged with helping the governor implement the Land Compatibility Task Force. The group's job is to provide incentives for preservation of military-compatible land, to review current local planning and zoning ordinances, and to solve basic encroachment problems, among other things. Chris Russo at the North Carolina Department of Environment and Natural Resources says the order will help military, state, and local officials make more sound decisions.
We're dealing with the second largest economic engine we got in the state. There needs to be a better awareness that in terms of the military is almost like the extra cities and the extra corporate entities that we have in North Carolina. And we have to recognize and include that in terms of our decision making.
Also included in the bill is the requirement for cabinet agencies to confirm that local officials be well trained in the rules of planning permits, zone ordinances, and other land use laws pertaining to military base requirements. The city of Havelock is home to Marine Corps Air Station Cherry Point. Director for Planning and Inspections Scott Chase says in his 6 years as director, his communication with the military has been a day-to-day occurrence.
We discuss land use issues on a regular basis. If a development occurs anywhere in town, whether it's in the air insulation compatible use zone or it's in a noise overlay or anywhere in the city, anything that associates with land use of significant change, like a special use permit, a conditional use permit, a subdivision, or rezoning, or a text amendment that may impact land use decisions in town, we collaborate with Cherry Point.
The order states that low-altitude flying can be adversely affected by a city's development, and local planning departments need to be aware and comply with military needs. Local agencies also need to be aware of the time constraints of military activity and training when economic planning is underway. To deal with some of these issues, the military created Cherry Point's Air Installations Compatible Use Zones program to work with state and local leaders to make their airfields safe from development on adjacent properties. Another department involved in land preservation and the Working Lands Group is the Department of Agriculture. Environmental Manager for the Department of Agriculture and Manager of the Agriculture Farm Development and Preservation Trust Fund, DeWitt Hardy.
We work to do preservation easements or conservation easements, whether they're term or perpetual easements, on different lands, whether forestry, whether they're crop land or horticulture lands, that will allow the continuance of production agriculture on those lands, while at the same time the compatible uses for the military.
As Director of Government and External Relations for Marine Corps Installations East, Paul Friday said, the relationship between state and military officials encompasses all levels of government. One of the most significant examples of this is the Fort Bragg Regional Alliance. In 2005, the base realignment and closure caused a lot of changes in base infrastructure throughout the country. That year, Fort Bragg and Pope Air Force Base began preparing for the transition of Army Reserves and Army Forces from Fort McPherson in Georgia to Fort Bragg. On August 1, 2011, Fort Bragg celebrated the opening of the Army's new headquarters and welcomed over 1,550 new Army and civilian employees. The executive order demonstrates the necessity of the military to the state and the communities they are a part of. Stephen O'Connell, Public Radio East.
The Down East Journal is made possible by our members in partnership with Crystal Coast Civic Center, Moorhead City, where every event is waterfront, business meeting and special event facilities available. Crystal Coast Civic Center, 252-247-3883.
My favorite programs, of course, are Morning Edition, Car Talk, and Wait, Don't Tell Me. Sometimes when we're in the car, our whole family listens and we laugh out loud. I'm Wouter Cadle, and I live in Moorhead City, and I'm part of the Public Radio East community. I really enjoy the in-depth coverage, and I like the balanced, fact-based perspectives provided on public radio. I believe that the community is an important place to bring together multiple perspectives in an open and civil dialogue so that when there are differences of opinion on how things can be done, that these perspectives can come to the light of day. So the sense of community is the idea that all these perspectives can be shared openly in an open dialogue to have accessible the types of perspectives that public radio provides. An important part of my life.
This is the Down East Journal. Artists, interior designers, and people with a creative eye will be showing off their talents decorating tablescapes during a fundraising event in New Bern next Friday. Money will be raised to help feed hungry people in our area. Fort Parsons speaks with Captain Ray Morgan with the Salvation Army in New Bern.
The amount of cases that we've served, the amount of families that we've helped through food pantry, through utility assistance, social services, through food or clothing donations, things of that nature, all of that is doubled over this past year.
The Festival of Tables, sponsored by the Salvation Army of Craven and Pamlico Counties, is a fundraising event to set the table to help fight hunger.
We kind of created this need to come up with a creative fundraiser idea that we feel like the community will enjoy being involved in and supporting.
To help raise awareness and funds to continue providing aid through its services, the Salvation Army has organized the first ever Festival of Tables.
It's kind of a social gathering where people are able to show off some of their flair, some of their decorating ability as far as interior decorators and things of that nature.
The Festival of Tables will feature tablescapes designed by area businesses, organizations, and individuals. Each participant will have a 6-foot round table with which to let their imagination run wild.
We've got all sorts of just a broad spectrum of people who are coming in and just with different artistic abilities, and that's the goal. There's really not too much of a restriction other than the size of the table.
Captain Morton suggests only that the tablescape have a table setting, and of course,
no explosives. If we could avoid anything of that nature.
Participants' tablescapes will be judged based on creativity, artistic flair, and overall originality. In addition to the decorations, a silent auction will also be held.
We've got a weekend that someone has offered on their yacht, including food and a trip and everything. We've got a couple of weekends at hotels. We've got a weekend at a cabin on the river. I mean, we've just got some great silent auction items.
Captain Morton hopes that the fundraiser will become an annual event. The Festival of Tables takes place Friday, September 21st at the North Carolina History Center at Tryon Palace from 6 to 9 p.m. If you would like more information, visit publicradioeast.org. I'm Ford Parson.
This is Ann Edwards, Horticulture Extension Agent, with this week's entry in the Garden Journal. It's been a wet late summer, to say the least. And as the ground got more and more wet, I've seen more and more fire ant mounds starting to show up. The ants were probably there all along, but the mounds showing up now that the ground is saturated. Luckily, it's a really good time of year to try and manage fire ants. There are three basic types of fire ant control products on the market. The first are drenches. These are products that you mix with water and pour on the mound. You need those if you need immediate knockdown of a mound. Let's say you have 8 or 9 children coming over to play in the yard, and you suddenly see a few fire ant mounds have popped up. Drenches the day before might be the best way to get quick control. However, they don't usually control all the ants, and generally you'll see new mounds pop up not far away within a couple days. Granules are another way to go. These are pesticides that are sprinkled around the mound or broadcast over the yard. Read the label very carefully and follow it exactly as it says. The label tells you how to use the product so that it's most effective. Never assume that you know better than the label how much should be applied or where. With granules, the ants are killed when they come in contact with the pesticide. They'll probably be more effective than the drench and will get more ants as they're used over a wider area, but rarely will they take care of all the ants. Most of these granules have synthetic pesticides, but there are some that have an active ingredient of spinosad, which is an organic insecticide. But remember, even with organic insecticides, there can be dangers to humans, so read labels carefully with any pesticide you use. Most effectively are baits. Baits are a pesticide that sort of pretend they're food. The ants actually pick up the pesticide and carry it back into the nest. You get the best control using these kind of baits if you use them properly. First, don't use old baits. They have soybean oil in them, and if the oil has gone rancid, the ants won't take the bait. Also, use them when it's not going to rain for a few days and after the ground is dried. Once it gets wet, the ants are probably not going to take the bait because they usually would not take wet, soggy food. There are various active ingredients for baits, including some growth regulators. Choose the one that you want to use, whether it be a growth regulator, a more organic form, or a synthetic pesticide. If you want organic, you want to look at spinosad again. the same organic active ingredient that you'd find in the granules. Any time that you're treating fire ant mounds, remember not to disturb the mound before treatment. When you disturb the mound, the ants will immediately move the queen away from the site where the initial mound is. There's also a good chance that you could be bitten. It's better simply to leave the mound alone, other than the treatment itself. If you're doing a drench, it's best to follow the directions, make sure you use the full amount of water they call for, and pour it on all at once. In any case, be careful around fire ant mounds, as some people have strong reactions. But do know that now is a great time to treat them. It will weaken the nest before winter, and a weak nest going into winter is less likely to show up again in the spring. Check around for fire ants, and I'll talk to you in next week's entry in the Garden Journal.
Thanks for listening to the Downey's Journal this week. If you have questions, comments, or ideas for features, you can drop us a line at our website, publicradioeast.org. Just look for the NewsHound link.